Salutan from BA. This is a Rorschach multilateral update from the 18th of November 2025, a summary of what's going down in the world's major multilateral institutions. First up this week, on Friday the 14th, the Food and Agriculture Organization published a report revealing that over the past 33 years, disasters have wiped out more than $3 trillion worth of global agriculture. The damage translated into massive losses in crops, livestock, and fisheries, with Asia bearing nearly half of the cost and Africa facing the highest proportional hit to its agricultural output. The Food and Agriculture Organization regularly releases public reports because part of its UN mandate is to provide transparent, evidence-based information on global food security, agriculture, and resource conditions. These reports help governments make policy decisions, support early warning systems for food crises, and guide international humanitarian and development efforts. In a report released the day prior, on Thursday the 13th, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development said that while healthcare standards across its member countries are improving, the cost pressures on public systems are rising. In 2024, the average health spend across member states hit almost 10% of GDP, which is up by about a percentage point compared to pre-pandemic numbers. Public health budgets are projected to grow by around 1.5 percentage points of GDP over the next two decades, mainly driven by technological advances, aging populations, and higher expectations. Meanwhile, on Saturday the 15th, the UN Security Council agreed to keep its peacekeeping mission in Sudan for another year, even though several members weren't fully comfortable with the new terms. The extension adds fresh performance requirements, saying that any future renewals will depend on clear progress from Sudan and South Sudan. Those expectations include pulling unauthorized armed groups out of the area, restarting joint political security talks, and setting up a shared police force for the region. In defense news, on Thursday the 13th, France carried out a test of its upgraded ASMPAR missile, firing it from a fighter jet without a nuclear warhead. This kind of missile will eventually sit on jets aboard the carrier Charles de Gaulle as part of France's airborne nuclear force. NATO officials framed the test as routine, but it comes as major powers keep updating their nuclear gear. NATO maintains strict standards for the safety, security, and reliability of nuclear weapons. These standards are built around rigorous technical procedures, shared planning, and constant coordination among member states. Overall, NATO's approach combines maintaining credible deterrence with minimizing the risk of escalation, accidents, or unauthorized use. From the air to the sea now, as on Wednesday the 12th, joint patrols by the European Union Naval Force and the Indian Navy successfully boarded a vessel used by pirates off Somalia's coast and reclaimed control of a tanker. The original crew of the ship was found safe. According to the EU, the network behind the hijacking has been notably disrupted and collected intelligence will support legal action against the perpetrators. The European Union coordinates naval forces from member states through joint missions and maritime security operations. While each nation retains control over its own warships, the EU's coordinated naval operations strengthen regional security, support humanitarian and peacekeeping goals, and boost Europe's ability to act together on maritime challenges. On Friday the 14th, the World Customs Organization revealed new research in partnership with the World Trade Organization and the International Chamber of Commerce, calling for greater active inclusion of micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises in secure trade programs. The report emphasizes making accreditation simpler, drawing on examples like South Africa's system, where over half of participants are smaller firms, and highlights the need to treat trade security measures as a gateway for smaller businesses into global markets. Shifting to oil, on Wednesday the 12th, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, shifted its view of next year's oil market and now expects supply to slightly outpace demand. The group had previously anticipated a shortfall, but rising output from members and producers outside the bloc is changing the balance. Demand is still growing, just not fast enough to absorb the additional barrels. OPEC is important because it brings major oil-producing countries together to coordinate production levels, which helps influence global oil prices and stabilize the market. Its decisions can affect energy costs, inflation, and economic conditions worldwide, giving the organization significant leverage over both producers and consumers. By managing supply collectively, OPEC plays a central role in maintaining predictable oil markets and shaping international energy policy. On Friday the 14th, officials from the United Kingdom Health Security Agency, the Pan American Health Organization, and the Caribbean Public Health Agency met with six United Kingdom overseas territories in the Caribbean to tackle rising rates of diabetes and other long-term illnesses. The territories are dealing with growing burdens from obesity and aging populations, so the group worked on improving early diagnosis, strengthening primary care, and tightening coordination across health services. In more health news, on Friday the 14th, UNAIDS released updated guidelines for conducting the National AIDS Spending Assessment. These refreshed rules help countries track HIV-related expenditures across government, donors and communities to spot underfunded programs, better integrate HIV spending into health financing, and boost value for money. Importantly, the update places stronger emphasis on community-led responses and transparency. On Friday the 14th, the Inter-American Development Bank Group rolled out two new digital platforms designed to help countries in Latin America and the Caribbean get a clearer picture of disaster risks and prepare more effectively. The announcement also highlighted partnerships with Google and the World Meteorological Organization to expand early warning systems, including flood forecasting tools. Altogether, the aim is to shift countries toward planning ahead rather than scrambling after damage has already begun. Staying in South America, on Friday the 14th, the Organization of American States wrapped up its 10th gathering of culture ministers, where representatives from across the region signed the Declaration of Washington, D.C., and agreed on a new plan to strengthen their economies. The document highlights culture as a driver of jobs and innovation and calls for better data, clearer recognition of cultural workers, stronger intellectual property protections, and tougher measures against trafficking of cultural artifacts. On Thursday the 13th, the government of Bauchi State in Nigeria and the Economic Community of West African States Bank for Investment and Development held talks aimed at unlocking a large facility to support major infrastructure, renewable energy, and agriculture projects in the state. The funds are broken down into about $82 million for road construction and $68 million for smart agriculture and energy initiatives. In legal news, on Wednesday the 12th, the United Nations chose Kenyan law scholar Phoebe Okowa to serve on the International Court of Justice, taking over the seat vacated by a judge from Somalia who stepped down earlier this year. She won enough support in both the General Assembly and the Security Council, which is required for the post. Her term runs until early 2027, giving her a bit more than a year on the bench. On Friday the 14th, the International Labour Organization announced that businesses in the Lao People's Democratic Republic are stepping up efforts to adopt more responsible practices across their operations. A new training rollout is helping companies understand human rights due diligence, labor standards, and occupational health in supply chain settings. The initiative, part of a wider regional program, aims to give enterprises practical tools to improve working conditions and sustainability while staying competitive. And for this week's opinion piece on Sunday the 9th, retired U.S. federal judge Mark L. Wolf wrote in The Atlantic, explaining why he chose to step down from the bench. He said he could no longer stay silent as he watched what he considers a misuse of legal power by Trump's administration. He argues that the executive branch is applying the law unevenly, targeting political opponents while shielding allies, which he believes weakens the rule of law principles he spent decades defending. Check out the piece with the link in the show notes. And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. Don't go yet, you'll like what's next. The first 5 people who send us an email at info@rorschach.com saying t-shirt and multilateral update will get a free t-shirt. You'd better hurry. See you next week.